The Sinister Six is back. New format again. It's okay. We're going to make it work. It's going to be great. We got a chance to go 12-11, 12-0 this week. And you're going to know why. And you're going to win a lot of money. All of that next. Make sure you tune into For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch each Sunday during the football season from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. The boys from For Fantasy's Sake will be bringing the fire fantasy football takes, updating you on the week's rankings and injuries, and getting you ready for your fantasy football matchups each and every week. The show is interactive, so be sure to send your questions. You can find them at For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, at FFSQC on Twitter, or you can send them an email at forfantasysakeqc@gmail.com. In addition to bringing fire on the mic, the team at For Frequency's Sake is still bringing it online as well. Check out forfantasysakeqc.com this season for college DFS, Survivor League, and betting advice each and every week of this football season. Again, that is forfantasysakeqc.com for college DFS, Survivor League, and betting advice each week during the football season. Oh, we're back, baby. It is time to roll. It's the Sinister Six. As I always say, I goofed it up. Shit. Rewind. Enough bullshit. Let's get real, son. Mac Folt, you know what time it is. Are you ready to get fucking real, brother? I'm jacked.
I'm ready to go 6-0.
I fucked up so bad yesterday that we couldn't do it, so we can do it today. We waited till today, and like three of our picks got better numbers. That was God telling us. We were smart not doing it yesterday. So we are here. Your first official show back since you have become a married man. I don't know how different that makes this. I don't know if there's like a contractual obligation to mention it or whatnot, but congratulations and all those things. Your fruit basket's in the mail.
I hold you to it.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of dried up apples. Okay. So, new format this week. Even though we are bouncing it after a week that we went balls to the wall where we technically got 7 picks in a 6-week pick because we made an executive – well, I made an executive decision that we were going to throw in the Commanders-Colts game because we didn't want to totally feel good about the Titans with Ryan Tannehill hurt. The Titans covered anyway in what ended up being a pick 'em. And also the Commanders covered in what was pretty much my lock of the week last week. That covered. We did kind of escape by our ass there, but regardless, a win is a win. So a 4-2 week for us. It's crazy, Mac. You want to know this? We felt the first game that went final last week was what we both actually thought was our lock of the week, was Wake -4 at Louisville, and it literally went in the worst way possible, and I'm thinking we're going to suck this week, and I just hate it. I'm depressed. I don't want to do this anymore. And then we win 4 of our next 5, and here we are. I cannot believe that after the Wake game, we rattled off 4 out of 5 after that, considering how horrendous that Wake, and like once in a generation that Wake loss was for us.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, like, if we're looking on paper, we were on the right side there. It's just Louisville played a game that we didn't expect them to play, and Wake kind of forgot how to play football.
Yeah, they had literally the most – it was like the most inadequate quarter in the history of the world where they had 7 turnovers in a quarter, 8 turnovers in one quarter. Just ridiculous. That you could never, that'll never happen again in football history if they could try. Anyway, real quick, let's get down to brass tacks and candle wax. We're changing up a little bit because this is going to be fun. We're both going to have our own flavor, but this will also give us a chance to talk more about some of these bigger games because Mac likes to dive in onto them more than I do, at least when it comes to making a pick. I don't know what that says about us. Maybe that says I'm a pussy. Maybe that says Mac's crazy. I don't know. Maybe both. Probably both. So this is going to be kind of like just us picking our six favorite bets. We're going to go back and forth. There's going to be times where we agree. There's going to be times when we disagree, and that's going to be the fun stuff. Don't have any of that this week. We have one where we do agree on. We'll talk about it. It'll be our Supernova champion of the weekend, hopefully. But we will get it started. So I will send it to you, Mac. We're going to start in the college slate first, as always. And, Mac, you have three games. I have two. So we'll start with you, Mac. Go first. Which one of your three college games do you want to let rip?
So the first one I'm going to go with is Kansas State versus Texas. I have Kansas State at +2.5. We've seen what this Kansas State football team can do, especially last week after their victory over Oklahoma State in very convincing fashion. Mm-hmm. Deuce Vaughn is going to continue to do what he does, and I think 2.5 is right around the number. I think they do win outright.
So I think this would be one of those. If you're going to take them, probably just rather take the money line for value. But since you are getting 2.5, why not, right? It'd be better if it was 3, but 2.5. You know, at the end of the day, college football numbers are weird. So those key numbers don't exist as much in college football as it does the NFL. Let me say this. The one thing about Kansas State that I feel like – I do think they're good. I feel like people aren't going to see this one. Like, this is one of those don't see the forest for the trees moment. Oklahoma State is really, really injured. And I think and Gundy punted on the second half last week. I think that had a lot to leading into why it was so lopsided. Granted, Kansas State did jump on them super early. I will also say this. An interesting factor to this game, Mac, is that it might not be Adrian Martinez playing at quarterback, but the kid that they have backing him up kind of makes the offense run better. I don't know how much.
You got to remember, Spencer Sanders might not play this week either. So, like, he didn't play the whole game. So, like, that's on me. Quinn Ewers, though, I think he's going to be fine. I just don't know if he can carry them to a point where they need to play against this defense.
So, I think they will be able to run the ball or at least do some stuff with Bijan. You would hope that Quinn Ewers is going to look a little bit better in his second road start. Like, listen, I can forgive the Oklahoma State game. That was his first ever true road start. And in college, and it's at Oklahoma State, a place they historically are bad and have just dumb losses. I mean, think of, like, even the best Texas, like that Vince Young team in 05 went to Oklahoma State and almost got beat. They had to, like, drag back a double-digit win that year or a double-digit deficit to come back to win that game, and that was Texas with Vince Young, one of the greatest teams ever. So, like, that they just historically are bad there. The fact that they are at home, I like. I obviously don't have a play in this, but I think this is a good, like, this is almost a pick 'em, and the fact that you're riding with Kansas State here, I don't think is a horrible idea. And this is almost winner, like, driver's seat to get to, especially if Kansas State wins, then we are on a collision course for TCU Kansas State 2.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
In Arlington. Which, if TCU wins, it could be a playoff spot out there in that trip, maybe. Okay, let's take my first college bet. I searched heaven and earth on this, and I couldn't find it, but Mac Fulton is the one who found it for me. I'm a little nervous about this. It's been bet down since it opened on Monday. But we are getting exotic. The first week that we switch it up a little bit with some certain locks. Mac brought this up. I think you brought this up about a month ago where you were saying, because you feel this, like, I would never do overs, unders, or team totals in the NFL. But in college, there's certain stuff that you can kind of cherry pick that you feel really good about. And
I feel like it's the low-hanging fruit that you should always be able to get. Like, there's some obvious, like, player prop that you could always win.
Exactly. And I think what we're going to end up doing is kind of some team total stuff. Well, you have some player props that I want to kind of throw out there. Let's give them to the public. Why don't we? But the stuff we'll actually add in the Sinister Six will be, if we do props, will be team totals or game totals. This week, the first one I got is a team total. It is Michigan State going to Champaign, team total under 12.5. Now, I was furiously looking for this. It was the first thing that came to my mind. what I'm only doing this because 17 is such a ridiculous number that I just still can't get my head around laying that with Illinois, I guess. I
see, I'm with you there. I understand why it's 17 though.
I do too. What you have, you add into the fact that all the turmoil and stuff. The one thing that I'm worried about,
Michigan State's run defense is one of the worst in the country,
and their pass defense ain't much better.
Exactly.
Like, there's a world where they come up and try to early in the game. They're loading the box. They run some sneaky play action or like a flea flicker, and DeVito gets a cheap like 70-yard touchdown pass in the game. Like, that's an early touchdown that I would expect to happen. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
The thing I'm worried about for this to hit, I feel like, let's say late it's 27-6 and Illinois is cruising. Mel Tucker ain't going to, like, with 2 minutes left, Mel Tucker is going to have the I got something to prove drive, and I feel like they're going to try to, you know, not give up. If this was still where it was when it opened at 13.5, I would love it, because that's pretty much saying they will not score two touchdowns. This one can get very scary, but I still think I'm going to ride with it. It was the one of the most confident things I had when we first were looking at our cards. I just could not find the total until today, because you can't bet on Illinois teams when you – or Illinois college teams when you live in the state of Illinois on FanDuel, and FanDuel is the one app that I search the most. So I couldn't find it, and Mac found it for me, so thank you. Michigan State, team total, under 12.5. Mac, we'll send it back to you. Next, college bet.
Yes. So number two bet of the college slate is I have Syracuse at +3.5 against Pittsburgh. I know Syracuse is coming off a game where they lost to Notre Dame, but I do expect them to bounce back with their strong run game and go after this Pitt defense.
I tried to find you a 4, but I couldn't. I heard one guy say
3.5,
a 4.
3.5 is good.
But I could not find you a 4. I agree. I think this is the right side, especially because Narduzzi is not a guy that is going to go balls to the wall to try to score. I think the under is the safest play in this game, but Syracuse plus the points is also really good.
Yeah.
My last college bet is a game total over. And I all week have been struggling on a certain game that is being played in Baton Rouge on where do I want to lay. Because all week I've been telling myself, Mac, ride with 9. He rarely lets you down. Lay the points.
Exactly.
But it's so fucking many points.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And they're not good on the road. They're just not. So at the end of the day, the easiest thing to do is try to find something you can cherry pick. Because here's the thing. I'm not saying I'm going to take LSU because I don't think they're that good. They have improved over the course of the year.
They shouldn't be ranked 10th. They should not be ranked 10th. Here we are.
Them ranked 10th is silly. But they have improved. And when Kelly gets his dudes in there, then the deep fryer will be engaged because gumbo will be served for everybody. But I'm just going to go with probably what I think is I wanted to play something in this game. I feel like, you know what? When you can't bet something for one team, bet something for both. We are going for the over 56.5. I mean,
that's a good play.
Yeah. 30. If both teams reach close to 30, 31-28 is money, money, money. Ain't it funny, honey? So, like, that's easy, I think. 56.5. If this over does not hit, I will personally be shocked. I don't think LSU – the one thing that I would be worried about is if we finally see for the first time since, honestly, the FSU game, LSU's O-line get overwhelmed. Because FSU, that was like one of the only games this year where they had full health up front, and they whipped the shit out of LSU's front five. Like, aren't we due for the Will Anderson-Dallas Turner takeover game? Like, is this the week we finally get it against an average LSU O-line that hasn't really been tested much this year? That's the one thing that could worry me about the under, because let's just say Anderson and Turner live in the backfield and they only give up 10 points, then, you know, we are struggling to get to 56 and to get to 57. So that's where I feel like we could lose it. But other than that, I think this is really good. I feel really confident about it. Any thoughts on it before we get to your last one, which we will probably talk about the most?
I think this game is going to be interesting. I do think it's going to be the over. But we got to remember LSU and Alabama do have a tendency of playing those random 21 to 10 games. And it's not pretty, even if LSU is not that great.
Right. No, I agree. I think that could be scary. But I feel like, isn't Bama also just due for a y'all should have remembered who we were game? Like, aren't they due for that?
It's the, hey, we're back. We never left. Hello.
It's
punch
just
in the face kind of game, yeah.
It's just they're so average. You know what I mean?
They're doing enough just to get by this year, and it's weird. It's on Alabama, like
by enrolling Bryce Young in their college. That's what in their university. That's what has allowed them to get by. That's the college version exactly. of employing X person.
Exactly.
Okay, final one. I mean, it's game of the week. Game of the year, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Can it top can it top Tennessee-Bama? That game was nuts.
I think it could. I mean, we're going to literally have a one-versus-one matchup. So,
yeah.
Yes, my third college game is Tennessee plus 8.5.
Yep, I got you an 8.5 today. I got you an 8.5 today. You sent it to me at 8 yesterday.
This thing has been fluctuating from 8.5 to 8, back to 8.5. So, 8.5 it is. This is going to be Hendon Hooker's toughest game. Yes, he's played Alabama already, and he showed out there. But this defense is a lot better than what Alabama's secondary is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be the Heisman game for him. If he continues the path that he's been going on, there's no reason why Hendon Hooker does not win the Heisman out of this.
Correct. Eight already was good, but 8.5, like, I think I said this about a game last week. I don't remember which one. But I'm trying to find it because I said this last week and I didn't get to post it. Oh, I didn't. No, fuck. It was the Green Bay Buffalo game because I was trying to mention like parlays and stuff. But I didn't get to post it because my old podcast platform sucked ass. Hey, even though it was good until it wasn't. Weird. But regardless, 8.5, Mac, is not just a back door. It is the entire rear end of the house ripped off from a hurricane, and that's the gaping hole you get to walk through at 8.5, especially with a team like Tennessee. So,
and again, that's a game I feel comfortable with that offense being able to score enough points. And I don't know if Georgia can keep up the pace with them. I think that's just a safe bet at that point.
What are the biggest – obviously, I would agree with you on if I was taking a side here. I just can't do it. I was scared against Bama, and I'm scared for this one. Not that I think Tennessee can lose. It's just I'm scared of, like, taking a side because I feel so – it's so toss-up for me. It's another test for Tennessee. Like, Bama was one thing, but now you're right. Like, Bama's defense is slow. And Georgia, like, are they going to allow dudes to just run wide open downfield? Not saying Hooker is just hitting wide open guys, but, like, they're doing a great job of scheming stuff. The offense they run is, like, old-school Briles, Baylor kind of stuff where – wide receivers are standing out past the numbers. It's hard to kind of get those concepts. You have the entire middle of the field wide open on most of these because of how much space they got to cover. Just the fact that they got to go on the road and they're playing a fast defense. The one thing for Tennessee that I really love, obviously with Nolan Smith out, but even with him in, it didn't make a difference. Georgia pressure rate is like in the 120s. They're like 70th in sack rate this year. Like, if Hooker has time, unless, that's a good thing. And if Georgia blitzes and Tennessee can pick it up, like, running backs are going to have to do their dirty work in the pass pro if Georgia brings extra guys. That's where I feel like Tennessee eventually will hit home runs. What is your biggest key in this game, in fact, of, like, if Tennessee wins, why? And if Georgia wins, why?
Georgia wins because of the front seven. If their front seven can get after it, they have the dudes to do it. They can get after it. I think they will cause fits to this offense for Tennessee. Tennessee just needs to continue to do what they're doing. You let Hendon Hooker cook and let him do whatever he does. And you just ride by, by the seat of your pants and just like let it go. You enjoy the ride.
Here's two. I got two for you, and I think they both fit. Number one is red zone defense for Georgia, offense for Tennessee. here's a stat for you, and I stole it from someone, but this is a good one. Mac, do you know what Tennessee's percentage is non-garbage time and goal-to-go situations?
I believe their percentage is like an 84%.
Wrong. 100. They have scored a touchdown on every drive, non-garbage time, goal-to-go. I don't believe there's going to be cheap touchdowns like there. Now, Tennessee had to work a bit in the red area against Bama, but they hit some cheap, big, like quick scores against Alabama because Bama's secondary is dog slow against the schematics of Tennessee. Yeah. I think Georgia will make them snap it again. And I also think Tennessee showed last week against Kentucky that they will be patient in how they run because Kentucky's whole goal was, we're just not going to get torched. They did a couple plays, but it's like against Tennessee, they have so many explosive dudes. How can't you? You look into Tennessee will move the ball, I think, because they'll be patient. Can they cash in the red area against tight windows, against a defense with more, not as many as last year, but they'll still have NFL guys. Now, here's the thing. The reason for Tennessee why it's so good is because they're scheme it well, and you have a guy in Hendon Hooker who is 24, 25 years old and has a lot of experience in the college game in the red area. That is important. And I think the other thing is the first quarter, because you said it, Mac, the front seven for Georgia. If Georgia gets a lead, and then Tennessee can't run the ball. And then Georgia, even though their sack rate and pressure rate is bad, but they just know Tennessee's got to throw their way back into the game, that is going to be a problem for the Vols. And that's where I could see it maybe getting away from them. But the first quarter is going to be so key because that's how – because, I mean, look what they did to Bama. They got out on them in the first, 20 minutes of the game, 28-10, 28-7. If that happens here, I don't think there's any way Georgia comes back. They don't have that kind. Like, Bryce Young was superhuman in that game against Tennessee, and it still wasn't good enough. Like, if Tennessee gets out to two scores early, especially on the road, and they don't have bat, and Georgia can't get like a pick six or a special team score, it's going to be a lot of work for Georgia to come back. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think if Tennessee can jump early, I think that's what gets them to a point where they'll be able to control the tempo, control the game, and they'll put themselves in the driver's seat. Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take a break. On the other side, we will have our NFL picks. We ride and die with the Pacific Northwest Birds once again. I have the two sketchiest bets of all time, and Mac is taking the man I said fade until the wheels fall off. All of that next. We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill in Moline and Davenport. Chase away your Sunday scaries at Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill this season. Located in the Belgium neighborhood of 7th Street in Moline, Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill is home to some of the Quad City's best food and drink specials. On Sunday, there's no better place to be. Clint's is serving up 75-cent wings and $4 Bloody Marys all day. And is your favorite team playing in those out-of-market games? Well, you'll never miss a second of the action on one of their 10 screens with NFL Sunday Ticket. And after you've had your wing and bloody fix, finish off your football watching experience with one of their famous Quad City style pop pizzas. And folks, they know pizza. They've been spinning QC style pies for the last 22 years. So make Clint's part of your Sunday football routine. Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill, 7th Street in Moline. And also, Clint's is now serving up their famous pizza and fried chicken on the Iowa side of the river as well. Clint's Pizza House and Chicken opens up daily at 4 p.m. so everyone in the Quad Cities can enjoy their QC-style pizza and Henny Penny fried chicken. That's Clint Pizza House and Chicken, 7th Street Moline, and 1601 West 3rd Street in Davenport. Big shouts to Clint Draft House. They're one of our bigger – them and Kavanaugh's one of our two of our bigger sponsors for our live Sunday show. Love the fact that we get to give them some love every time we get on the airwaves. Mac Fulton, are you ready to rock it, rock and roll with some Sunday action?
Yeah, let's do it.
Maybe a little bit of Monday action. Foreshadowing. All right, just to remind everyone, so far on the card, I have in our college slate, Michigan State team total under 12.5 and game total over 56.5 between Bama and LSU. Mac has Kansas State plus 2.5 against Texas, Syracuse plus 3.5 against Pitt, and Tennessee plus 8.5 between the hedges against Georgia. All right, I will start it off here since I have four of these, and we will go. Mac, remember that about a minute or two ago I said we got some sketchy bets?
Yeah.
On the 1 to 10 scale, your boy feels about a 2.5 on this one, but I have to. I have to let it fly. You might be proud of me for letting this fly, but I have to. We're taking the Chargers laying the 3 against Atlanta. Fuck, I can't believe I said that. Okay. People are probably wondering why. So, my reason here is kind of principle-based and kind of you're due-based. All right, so Atlanta was, what, 6-0 against the spread. Then Cincinnati could have probably scored 70 points on them, but they kind of took their foot off the gas, kind of. Plus, Atlanta actually showed a pulse. Then, a week ago against Carolina, Atlanta flies way too close to the sun. Should have got burned, but a referee clearly had Falcons money line and penalized DJ Moore for cheering in the end zone after PJ Walker. By the way, PJ Walker, that throw on that Hail Mary, is that what like one of the best throws you've ever seen? You saw that, right? The PJ Walker throw to at the end of the game. Like that was mind-bogglingly crazy. The DJ Moore throw or the PJ Walker throw to DJ Moore. So regardless, you have Moore at the end of the day, he celebrates, it backs the Falcons up 15 yards. They miss the extra point. Back the Panthers up 15 yards, miss the extra point. It goes to overtime. Then Marcus Mariota throws a pick to start overtime, and Carolina, for some reason or another, they decide to just kind of sit on it and go for the field goal. And Eddie Pinheiro, God love him, former Chicago football team guy, he goofed the gaff, missed a 30-yarder, and then Atlanta comes right down the field and wins in overtime. It was borderline theft. Crazy that that's what happened. And that is why we are taking the Chargers, and I do not feel good about it. I'm going to be honest. I'm supposed to come on here and preach prosperity and the immaculate vibes on a weekly basis, but this game, a little sketched. It is 95% having to do with the fact that the Falcons have flown way too close to the sun and they should have gotten singed a week ago. But regardless, they didn't, and they still found a way to win. We're laying only a field goal. It was at 3.5. It got down to 3. Honestly, if it stayed at 3.5, we would not have touched it, but it finally got below 3.5 today. So we are in major push protection in this game. That's a reason I feel pretty good to an extent, even though I've said I haven't felt good. Like, if I'm going to, it's because I'm only laying 3 with the Chargers. They're getting Keenan Allen back. Hopefully that can help. They're starting to get a little healthier, even though they still have key guys out for a while. They're right in the thick of things in the playoff hunt in the AFC to a degree. But yeah, at the end of the day, the thing that's so gross is that the last time we saw them, which feels like a decade ago, was that game against the Seahawks where they just got obliterated when they were nearly a touchdown favorite against Seattle at home and they got roasted. So Chargers laying 3 at Atlanta. It's not, I wouldn't recommend this one, but this one made the cut. I'm trying to stall for time because Mac had to step away for a second. This one made the cut over the Vikings and the Commanders. We were going to take the Commanders plus 3.5. It finally got down to 3. Fact that we're not laying, or the fact that we're not catching that hook, big reason we're not taking Washington at home. Listen, I know they blew the doors off Cincinnati, but Cincinnati plus 3.5, I told you all last week. Well, I mean, at least I tried to. I guess I did on the show on Sunday. So, yeah, I did tell you eventually. That was the hook, was the big reason we were taking it, because 27-24 gets you home. In this game for the Chargers, 27-24 pushes, which is better than a loss. Okay. 3.5 would have been, if you're laying 3.5, 27-24 loses if you're laying the points. So that's why we felt really good about the Browns on Monday. It's why we wanted to put the Commanders in here at plus 3.5. If that line gets back up, you will probably hear it on the Sunday show. The Commanders plus 3.5 against Minnesota. That's the NFL one. That's the NFL one that missed the cut. All right, I will send out now. This, I'm going to do this one while we're waiting for Mac, because we're both on this one. It is Seahawks at Cardinals, and the Seahawks are getting 2. This line opened up at 3. I am a little shocked that it hasn't been bet down further. Would I take this all the way to a pick 'em? Maybe. Honestly, maybe. Listen, man, I'm riding and dying with the Seahawks. They have done well for me in either games that we have actually come on here and said to take them, outside of that Saints game, but that Saints game was dumb. Saints have been weird for us. Sadly enough, we're fading them again this week. Not sadly. I'm going to always fade those stupid idiots. I will say this. With Seattle, you know, I wanted to take them against the Chargers. We ended up not. Mac vetoed it. Oh, well, you live and you learn. I think there's been a lot of spots this season with Seattle when it comes to covering the spread. A lot of people loved them week one, Monday night. They did no people wrong. Geno's been really good. They rolled. I really wanted to take them minus 3 against the Giants. Thought better of it. Thought it was more in the perfectly priced spot, but that was one initially I felt pretty good about. So, yeah, listen, man, Seattle getting points. I know it's on the road. Try to think of, like, the road games this year. The Saints game was a little underwhelming. They did get killed by San Francisco on the road. So will it be different? Will they play worse having to go to Arizona? That'll be interesting to see. That'll be a tell, that will be a tell on, you know, on how much we feel, you know, whether or not we can fade the Hawks or not ride with them the remainder of the year. That'll be a big tell on if they come out this week and play bad on the road, then that would be something that I think we should pay attention to. But we're going to ride with this one here. So Mac, I don't think he's going to be able to come back, which is a bit unfortunate, but I will give his thoughts on this. Let's see here. Seattle and Arizona. He was feeling it because, you know, Geno has looked like a top 10 quarterback, which he has. Pete Carroll also has been a coach of the year candidate this year. That's one thing that we have not. And then he goes along to say, you know, Arizona's solid, but they have been consistent with Kyler. We'll get to that in a second. So, Pete, honestly, this has been a really good year for Pete Carroll. Who would have thought, right? I mean, they have done the Lord's work. They took the Broncos behind the woodshed in the Russ deal. Then the fact that they absolutely – and the front office too. Like, the fact that they absolutely killed this last draft with Cross and Lucas on the O-line, Walker on the D-line, Kobe Bryant and Tariq Woolen at corner, Boye Mafe at edge rusher. Like, they drafted six guys that are starters right now, all rookies, and they're all killing it. Like, in one off season, the front office, who we were really sketchy, like, we really were wondering about some of their process and decisions when it come to drafting outside of a guy like DK Metcalf. They really hadn't hit on anyone in the draft in a while, like, big time in the last 4 or 5 years. They get rid of Russ, and all of a sudden it feels like the weight's lifted off of them. And Pete Carroll's done a fantastic job coaching. Shane Waldron, when he came in as the OC with Russ, everything still looked bad. We thought, oh, another OC there. You know, that's kind of maybe when we thought the O, oh, maybe it's Russ, not the OC. But this team with Shane Waldron and what they've done with Geno has been really good as OC. So we both, Mac and I both love, this is the Infinity Gauntlet. Team of the season for us, really, the Seahawks. We love the Seahawks here. Plus two in Arizona. The big toaster, as our boy Chris Berman would call it. And Mac also mentioned the inconsistency with Kyler. I would agree with him on that. They've been a little – they're so weird. They're the weirdest team in the league. Because at the beginning, I thought, man, they're just really bad. And then when you really break it down, they have dudes everywhere. Like – Kyler's a good player. At the end of the day, he is a good player. They have some. Oh, they have solid running backs. They have Zach Ertz, who's a top five tight end. Hollywood Brown with Kyler this year was balling before he got hurt. D-Hop's one of the five best receivers alive. Defensively, they got dudes. J.J. Watson playing well this year. They have a good secondary. Byron Murphy, Budda Baker, Isaiah Simmons at linebacker. Like, they have guys that are really good. The fact that they haven't been able to put it together is very, very odd. Mainly, I feel like it's just because of how poorly they're coached, and their O-line's not great, so very weird. But the fact they can win this game and be 4-4 and be right back in it, or 4-5, excuse me, 4-5, right back in it in that division, still do got to go to L.A. They play the Niners twice. Weird. They just look so lifeless the first time they played the Seahawks. That's a problem with them. They have moments, but then they just have – like, this is a really good take the points at Seattle. It was at three. If it was at three, we would be – we would probably get a loan to put on the Seahawks plus three, win it, to be able to pay the loan back, then have all that money to spend because of how much we cashed on the Seahawks plus three. Plus two is a little meh, maybe not, but we're riding regardless. Okay, next, we're going to stay with Mac. Mac has Colts plus 5.5 with New England. Now, I am going to try to do my best to be honest to God here and help him out because I wouldn't do this, but 5.5 is a world where you could see it. So we'll have to say Sam Ellinger did not look terrible. This is Mac's logic. With Sam Ellinger at quarterback, you would expect hiccups, but luckily they play a New England team that defense has been hit and miss. You would expect that. Now, Fields torched them Monday night ago when they played Chicago. Does Sam Ellinger have enough juice running the ball to give them issues? Because, like, even people have said that's kind of the theme that you're going to see this year with New England is quarterbacks. I would stay away from this. I wouldn't fade it. He said Colts will most likely be without JT, and they just traded Hines, but I do expect Ellinger to do enough to cover. It's a big backdoor, 5.5. If JT officially gets ruled out, then, yeah, you're feeling pretty good about the Patriots maybe, but the Colts line also might juice up plus 6.5, which then if you're back in the Colts like Mac is here, we're going to move the line with that. That would be some good juice. Now, also, here's the thing. Deion Jackson, this is more maybe a fantasy thing than a legitimate logistics on the field thing. Deion Jackson put up some gaudy numbers. Fantasy-wise, at least, without JT. He got a lot of targets. The offense didn't look terrible without him. They did throw the ball a lot more because that was the Jags game when Matt Ryan had a billion pass attempts. So we'll see. And lastly, for him, Miami -5 against Chicago. Actually, it's now 4.5. Miami -4.5 against Chicago. Talk about actually that one here in a second. Let's go to me real quick. Another one that is a little bit frisky. We're going to go Panthers +7.5 in Cincinnati. Now, there's a couple reasonings for this. This is the official. We put all the information we have on the board, all the puzzle pieces. We use those puzzle pieces to put together as much of a coherent piece of art as we can. And then we decide whether it's good enough to go to market. Here's what I mean by that. Last week without Ja'Marr Chase on Monday, granted, that was kind of the weird oddity game. You would think this would be a bounce back moment. But Zach Taylor has not been good this year. I mentioned all year with the Bengals how I've said, even though at times I've ranked them high and I felt good about them, every week they continue to remind me why I faded their over at the beginning of the season. I picked under 9.5 wins. I just did. All of the variance that they had last season, it's going to come back to kick them in the nuts. It started at the beginning of the year. They have 3 losses by walk-off wins. If that is not telling you that variance is kicking them right square in the cock, then I don't know what to tell you, because that is the truth. After last year, all you got to go the full circle route here then. Was Monday night an outlier considering they got their doors blown off? Could be. Very well could be. Could this be a bounce get back game? Maybe, but the Panthers have been frisky. 7.5 is a lot of points. The one thing that worries me here is this weekend is going to shift this line ridiculously. I feel like late money's going to come in on one side or the other. It's either going to blow us past 8, which would be huge, or it's going to take it under 7, which could be killer. And that's where we might have to fall off this and just bite the +3 bullet with Washington, because that was the side we wanted. We wanted Washington plus the points against the Vikings. It was at 3.5. It fell to 3. So that's going to be some interesting stuff to keep an eye on as we go into Sunday, when we will have kind of our, you know, tidied up version of this on the live show on Sunday. So right now, Panthers plus 7.5. They've been feisty. PJ Walker's been solid. If they can block up front for him, they got guys that can make plays. They kept DJ Moore. Brian, I mean, listen, I understand good rushers in the league are going to do stuff. Brian Burns is good. I don't know if he can wreck a game like Micah, TJ Watt, and Myles Garrett can, but Brian Burns maybe can possibly do some stuff that can be frisky. Panthers have been a frisky team. And am I worried that this is a bounce back for the Bengals? Yes. The last point here, we mentioned that we take the information we have of the puzzle pieces, we put it on the board, and then we see if it's a good enough looking piece of art to put in the market. Here's what I mean by that. Full circle moment right here. They looked like doggy doo-doo without Ja'Marr Chase on offense. Is that a thing? T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd are really good, but they do not run the ball. They continuously stay in shotgun. Their game plan schematics sometimes are just not good. Burrow is great. Higgins is really good. Boyd is good. Without Chase, it doesn't not work, but it kind of lowers the ceiling a bit. That's something to note. Like, what if they just are what if they're just average without Chase because Zach Taylor can't adapt? Like, if that's a thing here, then we are feeling absolutely beautiful with the 7.5. Okay, I want to do the Dolphins Chicago one last for Mac because I feel bad for him that he couldn't finish. So we're going to do this next one next here for Baltimore. Lastly, Ravens minus 2.5 against New Orleans. New Orleans has been so weird. We faded them multiple times. It's worked. Then it hasn't worked. And I don't know, man. It's depressing. It's really sad. We're just going to continue to throw AFC North daggers at the dartboard until they stick. We tried this with Cleveland. Didn't work. We didn't try it with Cleveland. That was against Atlanta. They'll play them late in the season. We'll probably try it with Cleveland because they'll have Deshaun back. We tried it with Cincy. It worked. We tried this with the Raiders. It didn't work. We tried it with the Seahawks. It didn't work. We're trying it with the Ravens. Listen, again, the Saints, great performance. What I do like is that they finally got Alvin Kamara. The juice is back there, right? This is a huge spot for Baltimore. Huge spot for Baltimore. You're laying less than a field goal. I'm not going to believe the Saints are any good at all until maybe if they win this week, then that'll be me finally eating it. But Saints, you know, I just can't do it. Fade Dennis Allen until The house burns down. Ravens minus 2.5 against the Saints. I love it. Okay, lastly for Mac, Miami minus 4.5 against Chicago. Let's take a look at this. Late money coming in on the Bears to move the line. Made some Chase Claypool love. Interessante. I like it. I think I'm going to do a live, you know, by the time this comes out, you'll probably have heard it. So there probably is going to be something that I come out with more juice on some trade deadline stuff. So stick around or go find that. Here we go. Miami minus 4.5 for Chicago. This is Mac's words. Miami hasn't done me wrong yet. Tua looks solid in his return versus Detroit. Was second game back, but he looked pretty damn good against Detroit. Tyreek Hill has been incredible. Facts. Also, getting Chubb reinforces a solid defense. I agree. Great move by them. Chicago is still trying to figure out their identity. Nah, I don't think so. Glad they got JF won some help, but I don't know if it will show this week. Miami outright. I agree on that. I do think the Dolphins win. If Chicago wins, I'd be a bit shocked. It's weird. This is the Joe Winkle Bowl. Both of my boys are going at it. Tua and JF won. Hey, man, this game ends like 45-40, so the Dolphins win, Matt covers, and both quarterbacks and teams look really good, then I am a happy boy. Here's what I will say in regards to some trades, just in case I don't get any of this out here, because these are the two most active trade deadline teams, oddly enough. First for Miami, the Bradley Chubb piece, love it. They go out, they need another DN, so now you have a rotation. With you can use Melvin Ingram in spots moments, Jalen Phillips on one end, Bradley Chubb on another. People are losing their mind over them moving a one for a guy like that, but it's a premium position. I love it, and they lock him up immediately. Fantastic move. Do I think Bradley Chubb is some top eight pass rusher? He's in the fringe, but regardless, this is a fantastic move for a team that – the last step for them, even though they haven't protected the quarterback well this year, they've done it well enough, especially with their schematics and how quick they get rid of the ball. That hasn't been an issue to a degree. They really needed someone that you can trust can hunt the quarterback, and Bradley Chubb could do that. I love the move. They also go out. So in the Bradley Chubb trade, they ship Chase Edmonds off. They get him from Arizona, where last year Edmonds had this crazy season where he had 18 touchdowns. And this year, he's been horrendous. They trade Edmonds to match the salary in the Bradley Chubb deal. Then they flip a fifth to San Francisco for Jeff Wilson. I love that move. You pair him with Mostert. Mostert's been really good. Wilson's a guy that I like some of the stuff that he can do and some of the stuff that he can bring. A guy Mike McDaniel obviously knows real well, but the fact that you now have that in your backfield, big fan of that. Now real quick for Chicago. I love what they did. Listen, trading Roquan Smith, they get a 2 and a 5 for him. At the end of the day, they obviously felt like they were not going to be able to re-sign him, so they made the move and made their and lived with it. And I'm with that. I've wanted this team to be decisive, and the issues we had in the offseason was they didn't do anything for Fields to go out and get better at positions on the offense. They waited. They have now clearly shown that they've had a plan. They've over the last few weeks, the offense has gotten substantially better. Fields is stacking good start after good start after good start after good start. 4 games in a row now where he has looked good either the whole game, most of the game, or some of the game. Second half against the Vikings. Spots here and there against Washington. Even though they didn't score other than the one touchdown drive against Washington, that was a a carnivorous shit show around him. The fact that they almost had a chance to win that was Fields and Fields alone. And then against New England, he was dynamite start to finish. And for about 80% of the game against the Cowboys, other than a couple weird mistakes, he was dynamite again. This is where now they go out. They are finally getting out of the mold of building around defense first, which you still have good defensive players. Their secondary is good. Brisker, Eddie Jackson. Thank God they didn't get rid of Eddie Jackson, man. I have had a weird relationship with him. I loved him early. Then he all of a sudden just turned into this shell of himself late. But Jaquan Brisker, drafting him, has absolutely unlocked Eddie Jackson again and how they play this defense. He's been just sensational this year. Fields is starting to become there, but Brisker, You'll probably need another week or so for Fields before I'll have him top Brisker. But Brisker has been their best player since the beginning of the year. The rookie from Penn State at safety, loved that pick. Questionable on the Kyler Gordon pick. We all know that. But at the end of the day, he has improved. Kendall Vildor has had a solid, as a good season for his standards. He's been so bad the last couple of years. This year, he's been good. They still need another corner. And then Jalen Johnson, we already know he's one of the best corners in the league. Defensively, they don't have really good edge rushers, but now with Roquan or with Robert Quinn gone, they're going to be able to play Dominique Robinson and Travis Gibson more together. They're going to be bad still at stopping the run. They're still slow on the front seven. Offensively now, here's the big thing. They get rid of Roquan. They get a pick. They then send one of their 2 seconds. It was their own, which is, but I'm okay with it. For Chase Claypool, for the Steelers to add a weapon. Oh, I love this so much. Now, listen, I am not the biggest Chase Claypool fan. I think he's got a lot of talent. Would I rather have like a DJ Moore or a Brandon Cooks, something like that? More to a degree, yes. But Claypool is a big guy. One of the biggest things, like, so as of late, they have been able to start to figure out some of the crossing route stuff to get guys open in the middle of the field. But on a weekly basis, whether it's Velus Jones or Dante Pettis, or even sometimes Darnell Mooney, because that's just not his game, they are throwing deep balls. And even Equanimeous St. Brown this week against the Cowboys had one. They are throwing deep balls, and guys are just not making plays. Chase Claypool is a guy where if you give him a shot one-on-one, he can go and get it. And they finally have that with Fields. They had Allen Robinson's ghost last year, and he obviously just didn't give enough of a damn to care about it. So this year, I love that they go out and get Claypool. It can fixate Mooney as an opposite field target or a slot guy. Oddly enough, Cole Kmet is coming around. I know I say a lot of bad things for him, and I always drop the Antoine Winfield reference, but I heard Trent Dilfer say it. I heard some other people say it. When you look at what they do, they are clearly starting to use him a bit more in the passing game. When it comes to their run game, he is a really, really good blocker, and they are starting to find some stuff to use him for. And I feel like that's, you know, another guy that you can use. Pettis and St. Brown have showed some value this year. Don't want to talk about Velus Jones. I'm a little shocked they kept Montgomery, but at the end of the day, you weren't probably going to get more than a sixth rounder for him anyway. Khalil Herbert, they are continuing to roll him out, and I love it. So, listen, man, good stuff for Chicago. I know I kind of took a rant there. I do like the Dolphins 4.5 to an extent, but I wanted to kind of give a synopsis on those two teams and their trade deadline moves. Here to end this. So we'll take a break. We'll run down the full slate once again real quick after this. For fantasy's sake has teamed up with Route 96 Boutique to raise a little more cash for Toys for Tots this season. From September 11th until the end of November, 10% off of all purchases made with Route 96 on Sundays will be donated to us for our Toys for Tots drive. At Route 96, they believe in girl power. They want a place that people of all shapes and sizes can shop and feel empowered and beautiful. They want you to be the best you possible, and they are committed to bringing you different styles while also providing some basics to express the true you. You can find them on Facebook and at Route96Boutique.com. Again, that's Route96Boutique.com. All right, that's going to do it. As well, thanks to DJ Jarvis, as always, and Doug Green. Doug Green's the one who usually gets us up on the air. Back on StreamYard. Oh, baby, it's been fun. A couple here. Shout-out to Mac Fulton for coming on for what he could. I'm sorry he wasn't able to do it for much longer, but, you know, it is what it is. I appreciate him for giving us the picks, and we enjoyed the time regardless. This will hopefully be the last week for him where he's crazy busy, and next week we can come back to some relaxed and energetic instead of stressed and Mac wondering where he's got to be at all times. It's busy time for him of the year. Busy time, if you know what I mean. All right, let's run down our picks. So Mac Fulton has a college slate, Kansas State +2.5, Syracuse plus 3.5 going to Pitt, and the Tennessee Volunteers plus 8.5 between the hedges against Georgia. Then in the NFL slate, he has the Seahawks plus 2, the Colts plus 3.5, or excuse me, the Colts plus 5.5 against New England, and the Dolphins minus 4.5 against Chicago. For me, we have the Michigan State team total under 12.5 points against Illinois. We have the Bama LSU over at 56.5. Oh, baby, we love her some points. And then four NFL games. We have Chargers laying the 3 against the Falcons in Atlanta. Seahawks plus 2, our lock unity of the week here, and against Arizona. Then Panthers plus 7.5 in Cincinnati, and the Ravens minus 2.5 against the Saints. Our records, we're just back near to 500. 26-27-2 for me, 22-28-2 for Mac on the year. We hope that we can get above 500 this week and we can roll. I'm excited. I know you guys are excited. We just can't hide it. All right, so that is going to do it for us here at the Sinister Six. You would have known this already if we went live, but we'll see. Might have to ask DJ again. But regardless, if we did, I hope you enjoyed it. If not, well, it happens. Regardless, this has been the Educated Ignorance Podcast. Reminding you, as always, if you ain't got the game, you best pass the sticks. We will see you guys on Monday. Sunday Night Review, Sunday Day Games. We'll actually be here for that again. Until then, we are out. Peace.